There's a lot of podcasts out there, but there's really only one that's covering the wrong movie at the wrong time in the wrong place.
Oh, is that how did this get made? I like them.
They are a good one. But we're not talking about how it's made. We're not talking about how did this get made or how it's made.
Yeah.
We're No Highway Option, the podcast that answers the one question all great media makes you ask. Is this better, worse, the same as Vin Diesel's 2005 seminal masterpiece, The Pacifier? I'm one of your hosts, Luke, and I think the scent of the 90s, it's got to be like that Crystal Pepsi or something, right?
Well, wasn't that just Pepsi?
Yeah.
So it smelled like clear. Pepsi. But clear. And I'm your other host, Connor. And I mean, for me personally, if I were to wake up and smell the 90s because I only lived for about half of them, it would probably just smell like dirty diapers.
All right.
Just personally.
We have a special guest with us today. You want to introduce yourself?
Hey, thank you guys for having me on. My name is Derek McDuff. I'm a writer and I'm also a podcaster as well. I do a podcast called Underrated where we also talk about movies. We haven't covered The Pacifier yet, but maybe it should be on the list. But for me, I was actually alive during the whole 90s. I made it in just at the end. I was alive for 4 months in the 80s, so that meant I got the whole 90s. So for me, I think, you know, no one can say what the 90s was smelled like best other than the man himself. Kurt Cobain, they smelled like Teen Spirit.
They did.
I gotta give it to you. And in case that hasn't given you any hint, the movie we're covering today, given to us by last week's guest, Tyler Freeze, is Die Hard 2. Die Harder.
I always thought that Die Harder was the subtitle, but it was just the tagline.
Well, it's weird because I've seen it both ways. Like on the screen, it just says Die Hard 2, but if you like look it up in like posters and stuff, like official sources, I think it's like one of those like live, die, repeat situations.
I was just about to say that Edge of Tomorrow, live, die, repeat. They couldn't decide which one.
Which is like maybe like the worst movie title I've ever heard in my life. Die Hard 2, Die Harder. Like that is just so dumb.
But I like it a lot. I like when sequels like take the first one. They're like, let's do something silly with it.
Like, yeah, I wish it would had just been Die Harder, though. Like, that would have been great, but they couldn't decide. They had to do both or neither. Like, I don't know. It
could have been such an easy trilogy of Die Hard, Die Harder, Die Hardest.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think With a Vengeance is better than Die Harder.
That is not a pretty badass title.
Yeah, that is a fun title.
And it has Sam Jackson in it, so, like, you can't lose.
That the later ones, like, where they put Die Hard in the background aren't as good titles.
No.
Like Live Free or Die Hard is always confusing to say, and A Good Day to Die Hard is just, it's just a stretch.
And I well, don't remember which one is which. Well, there is
nothing good about A Good Day to Die Hard.
That's the fifth one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Horrible movie.
That's Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia.
Just so bad.
I just love to say that because that's so dumb. In terms of history with the Die Hard franchise, personally, like, everyone's seen the first one. And then if you'll think back to the first episode of October for this year, we did cover Live Free or Die Hard. So this is my third Die Hard movie. Well out of order.
See, yeah, it's the same thing for me. I saw the original one, obviously, and then at the when the Live Free or Die Hard came out, I saw it in a theater, so I'd only seen the first one and the last one because I got dragged there by my girlfriend at the time's family. They're like, let's go see the new Die Hard movie. And I was like, what happened in these like intervening like 20 years or whatever that this franchise has like come down so low, and so this is the first time I'd seen anything in between, so it was kind of like the first like gradual step down in quality. So it's like, okay, this is definitely closer to the first Die Hard.
Yeah,
but I could see where the series was trending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, the first time I saw Die Hard I saw 1, 2, 3, 4 all as Blockbuster rentals, like within a relatively same amount of time.
Mm.
And I was a kid, so like it's cemented in there.
Well, yeah, and yeah, when you're a kid, you're not going to be like, well, I don't know, like the direction from the first one to the second one, like I don't think the cinematographer was working as hard. You're just like, yeah, he's blowing up planes. Hell yeah. Which is exactly how I reacted to the movie.
He said the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we talk too much more about it, we'll do the thing we do every week, which we, Connor has written one half of a summary of this movie, and I have written the other. And we flip them, and then we read each other's cold. So Connor wrote the first half of the movie this week.
Yep, and you should have the link in the Facebook message.
Gotcha.
Let me. It's a short that. One because I didn't realize what time it was, and I went, oh shit, I have to write this. You know, sometimes that happens. You clean up after a Thanksgiving. You're like, oh no.
And this is called. This is titled Die Hard 21.
There's a space.
Die Hard 2. 1.
There you go.
John McClane can't catch a break. His car's being towed. It's Christmas in Washington, D.C. Oh, and a bunch of terrorists are attacking an airport because there's a plane with a Spanish drug guy coming to get arrested. The tower can't communicate with the planes in the air because the terrorist took down the radio. And they're all doing some suspicious stuff, like making the plane computers think the ground is lower than it actually is. So one blows the hell up, like a big surprise. Boom. Oh, and John's wife and mother-in-law are on a different plane, which hasn't blown up, with the asshole news guy from Die Hard 1. The mother-in-law has a taser, and she's just going to keep that in her purse for a little bit. Just in case. Was that his mother-in-law? I don't think it was.
I think that was just some lady, right?
Yeah. Oh, it was just some lady. I assumed it was his mother-in-law because she was sitting next to his wife and he mentioned mother-in-law's car. So I'm like, I don't know why the mother-in-law would be flying, but I guess she is.
I think it was just a mother-in-law dig.
Yeah. Yeah, now you gotta marry your mother-in-law. But yeah, that's pretty much what happens in Act 1. There's also the, they demand their own plane so they can escape with... The drug guy's name is, it's like Esperanza? That's exactly what it is.
I was gonna say, it sounded close.
Yeah. There's a bunch... Ramon Esperanza, drug lord and dictator of Valverde. He was going to be arrested to stand trial on drug trafficking charges.
And he's also Latin American, which I think is important, not Spanish, because that ties into the whole Contra CIA thing that they're drawing on for this movie.
Right, right. But yeah, and, they discover one of the guys, they get his fingerprints, and he's like actually been dead for a few years. A lot happens in this.
And that's the only segment we get of the cop from the last movie, which I think is a loss here.
Yeah, what's his name? Family Matters.
Reginald Valjean, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he had to Urkel.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because he's in a different place, but they're a good team, you know? And the whole thing, he's on the phone last time.
So yeah.
Why not have him?
But now there's a different guy who would go on to be a cop on another show. The guy, I can't remember the character's name, but he would go on to be in NYPD Blue. The guy who was like, he was like, listen here, McClane, I don't like any of this shit you're doing.
the asshole cop who's just like, what do we do? He sounds like he's from Chicago, and I keep having to be like, it's Washington, D.C., it's Washington, D.C. He's got his brother who's like, ah, parking ticket. Yeah, we're both cops. You get a fucking parking ticket still. And it's...
Yeah, is that guy from something else too?
I'm sure he is.
I think he's like a that guy, you know? You see him crop up and stuff.
Yeah.
He definitely felt like a that guy.
Well, speaking of people who just pop up in little things... one of the members of the platoon that comes to help out is John Leguizamo.
Really? I caught somebody else too in there that was like a bit player. But okay, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he just walks by more than a few times, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, this
wait
is
a minute.
This is 1990. Like, I think you're at a point enough in your career where people will know what is John Leguizamo doing, like, barely having any lines. And according to IMDb trivia, in his autobiography, John Leguizamo said he was supposed to have a much bigger role until the filmmakers realized how short he was.
Did you guys notice Robert Patrick in this too? Like a pre-Terminator 2 Robert Patrick? He was one of the, he was like one of the
Oh,
goons.
Yeah.
I was like, is that fucking Robert Patrick? Can I cuss on here?
Yeah.
Okay,
good. Go nuts.
I was like, that's Robert Patrick. Like, what? And then, like, I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm getting ready for him to be kind of like the main guy, like how, like, the blonde guy was in Die Hard 1. And he gets shot in, like, the first shootout. I was like, oh, man, what a waste of Robert. I guess they didn't know at the time
yeah,
who Robert
he wasn't,
Patrick was, you know?
He wasn't.
Who they were wasting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, the, what's it called? Captain Carmine is Dennis Franz.
Yes.
Captain Carmine was...
The mustache cop.
Ah, gotcha.
The main mustache cop. And you know Dennis Franz. He's in Mighty Ducks the movie, the first face-off. Oh, that's not the real Mighty Ducks. That's the cartoon where they're alien ducks who play hockey.
Oh, man. Yeah. That was a show. That was some, not, speaking of what the 90s smells like, that
yeah,
smelled like that 90s Mighty Ducks show.
Cartoon ducks.
The 90s were
smells
wild
like
time.
Desperate franchised attempts. Yeah, and trying to see if they have his brother. What was his brother's name? Do we remember?
His brother's name was Cop from the beginning, who gives a money ticket.
Yeah. Sergeant Vito Lorenzo.
Yeah, because he's like, hey, Vito, get that car out of the way. What are you doing, Vito?
Hey, we're going to get in this car and very obviously hit a taxi. But how can we see it?
The slowest moving taxi in the world. We're just going to full on slam into it.
He's played by Robert Jason Costanzo. What else has he been in? Saturday Night Fever, Dog Day Afternoon, Two of a Kind, Dick Tracy, City Slickers, Batman Mask of the Phantasm. He did a lot of Batman stuff, it looks like, but like all voices. Ah, he's an Air Bud Golden Receiver.
A classic.
Yep.
Food Fight, Once Upon a Time in Brooklyn. He's in a bunch of stuff. I don't know. Oh, he's, Luke, do you remember the Quantum Leap episode, Kamikaze Kid?
Yeah, of course I do, dude.
Of course you do.
With he's the race, the racing, and the little brother. It's like the 50s-ish. Yeah.
He plays Chuck Thompson in that episode. So that's probably where you recognize him from.
Is that the... Which guy is this?
Chuck Thompson. This is the asshole cop at the beginning who gives him the ticket.
Huh. So he's got to be like somebody's dad or something.
He's Chuck Thompson.
Yeah, he's probably the shitty husband's dad.
I feel like he was the referee in Air Bud because I just remember like a clip in my brain and I think it's him where it's just like, does he dribble? No, but he does drool like from the trailer. So I feel like that was probably him.
That's a good line. It's easy to make fun of the Airbuds, but then they're like, hey man, we've got airtight logic. The rule book says, doesn't say a dog can't play basketball. And it's like, yeah, shit. Let's make 20.
And they can talk now, apparently, and like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, they're superpowered now. I
don't know if
see a commercial, I'm like, what happened to Airbud? It was just about a dog that played basketball. A simple concept.
Yeah, I don't know if he's ever talked.
Children.
Yeah, the kids talk. I don't know if he can, which, like, would be depressing.
That's just one of those universes that just gone off the rails. Like,
maybe that should be next summer's franchise marathon.
Is Air Bud.
We should do Air Bud. Air Bud August, the dog days of summer. Anyway.
The dog days of summer.
I'm Die Hard opposed. 2. I know you're not. You're the person who came up with March Madness, for God's sake. Die Hard 2, this one, this is fun because it feels like it has a lot of lines where it's like, I don't know if you've seen like 22 Jump Street, where so many lines are like, you're going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but we have a bigger budget. It feels like there are a lot of those lines in there, but they tried to make them like real lines because he keeps running around being like, why does this keep happening to me?
Well it's just my luck. There's like a Ben Stiller show. Have you guys ever seen the Ben Stiller show?
I have not.
Oh. It's like, it was this like amazing sketch comedy show that like Ben Stiller did, and like all these people who would go on to be hugely famous. And it was like one of the best sketch comedy, like smartest shows. And it got canceled after like a season. Like it got canceled almost immediately because no one watched it, even though it was brilliant.
It's one of those like the Danny Carvey show type things where it's like huge, so funny, but everyone's like,
And there's this great clip of like Ben Stiller winning an Emmy for it. And he's just like, yeah, we were canceled 8 months ago. the point is there's this sketch that he did because it was on like in 1990, and there's this sketch that he did, it's like Die Hard 21, and it's just like him just the whole time like, how does this keep happening to me over and over again? And it's just like, it would go on, it felt like it predicted the Die Hard franchise. And it's, I feel like it's really interesting when you see like the sequels to like there's you have like the sequels where it's like, okay, like Mission Impossible and stuff, it like makes sense for Ethan Hunt to be going on another mission. Mm-hmm. But then there's the sequels like this or like Jaws or something where it's like, okay, this was a very specific situation, how do we get the same people into this situation again? And when it happens a second time, it's like that clip from like Phineas and Ferb that's become a meme now, where it's just like, if this happened to me twice, I'd have nickel for every time it happened.
It's weird that it happened twice.
Exactly.
Which isn't a lot.
So it's like, okay, you can kind of believe that this very specific thing would happen to this person a second time. It's like, okay, coincidence. But when it happens like five times, by the time you're on like Live Free or Die Hard or Die Hard with a Vengeance or Jaws the Revenge, you're like, okay, this is getting weird and ridiculous at this point. But I think, like, for the second one, it's like, okay, like, I get, this is, like, very specific situation, it's happened to the same guy again, but, you know, weird things happen, he's got two nickels, you know?
I don't think he references it at all in Live Free. I think he's just like, it's a thing I gotta do. They always call on me, and I always gotta do it.
Yeah. Watching that one so recently before this one, it does make you pretty aware of how much that one is, like, not a Die Hard movie.
That one's, like, just, like, a spy action movie that they were like, we can make it Die Hard.
Yeah.
We can make him say, yippee-ki-yay, mother gunshot.
Well, it's interesting, none of them were written as Die Hard movies, except for, I think, the fifth one. Like this one's based on the first one was supposed to be like famously, you know, based on book. I forget the title, but it was gonna like they had already made the movie with old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra, and then it was gonna be a sequel. And then this was based on a different book, and then the other one. Then there was like different scripts that 3 and 4 were based on. So it's just weird because they're just like, let's just put John McClane into the thing, and then it'll be a Die Hard thing.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of fun to do that.
Yeah.
And it works so well occasionally, like it worked for 10 Cloverfield Lane, does not work for the Cloverfield Paradox. But, this was based off a novel called 58 Minutes. And if you look at the cover of the book now on Wikipedia, it says 58 Minutes, : basis for Die Hard 2. And,
right.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, there's a police captain at an airport, and he has 58 minutes to stop terrorists to meet their demands until the planes start crashing and it's gonna snow. Which, yeah.
I could see how someone would see that and be like, okay, this is a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, because I gotta give this a lot of credit to, like, the first one taking place in the tower, and it's, like, famously, like, it's just that location. I gotta give him props to be like, how do we escalate? Like, we don't just want to do another building. What's, like, the next step up from, like, big plaza tower? Airport? Yeah, that raises the stakes. That works. Yeah. It's not like...
city?
Yeah, I was gonna say, and then Live Free or Die Hard, it's like, what if it's the entire eastern seaboard? And it's like, no, we don't need that.
I think this movie, it just kind of does, it's like a pretty good sequel, you know? It's like Die Hard 1 is obviously like one of the best action movies ever made, you know? And this is just like it does everything the first one does, just kind of like not quite as good. Like, it's just like, okay, like I liked all of this, but like you can't compare it to Die Hard 1, but it's just like a safe bet for a sequel. It's just like, let's just have, you know, kind of like, and they just kind of like, there's a little convoluted how they get some of the people back from Die Hard 1, but they're like, okay, like the asshole news reporter guy, Walter Peck, you know, he just happens to be on the same plane, and it's like, okay, cool, like whatever, you know.
What a coincidence.
Right. And, you know, he's like, oh, I'm working the LAPD now, so I can call, you know, my buddy from the first one. Like, we're working in the same precinct now. So it's like, all right, all right, you've got all the pieces together. You know, it's actual terrorists in this one instead of, like, the fake terrorists that were in the first one, which I think is a little bit to the movie's detriment. And I think it was John McTiernan, somebody from the first movie was talking about how they, like, originally it was supposed to be real terrorists in the first one, and they changed it to robbers to kind of, like, give it a little bit of brevity so, like, the movie could be more quote-unquote fun.
And yeah, like, soften it a little bit.
Yeah, and it's like, this one, it's like, okay, they are actual terrorists, and they are actually, like, so it loses a little bit of that kind of just, like, funness. It's like, okay, these are, you know, like, military guys who are, like, helping out this drug lord, which is, you know, I think one thing that is as aged well is, like, yeah, these guys are, like, oh, we've got to stop communism, so let's help out this horrible dictator, which is something that the United States definitely did in real life. And you know, like, that's a very, like, in 1990 for them to be like, this is the take that we're going to go with. I'm like, okay, good for you guys.
Yeah, we're going to, you remember that fun movie with the Yippie-Ki-Yay? What if we tried to allude to the Iran-Contra affair just a little bit?
just a touch. Yeah. And I love William Sattler. Like, he's one of those, he's a that guy, but he's almost graduated out of a that guy. Like, he's, you see him in stuff, like, he's the president in Iron Man 3. He's one of my favorite roles ever. He's Death in the Bill and Ted movies. So you're just like, who is this guy? And he's just kind of like, you know, he's so good in this as the villain. Like, I almost wanted Robert Patrick to switch parts with him, but I do love William Sattler, so I'm fine with it.
Okay, that's where I recognize him from. He was one of those where it's like, I think I've seen that face before, but, like, it hasn't clicked in too much.
Yeah, he's on the precipice of getting out of a that guy, but he's still there.
There's a lot of just fun one-liners in this one, too, which, like, you can tell they really latched onto that after people were like, that's the fun part in the first movie. More. Like, I think I read they wrote more in, but they were like, Bruce, just talk. People like it when you talk. Like, I wrote down more than a few lines that I liked. They're talking about, like, it's the 90s, there's air phones, there's microchips or whatever. And he says, as far as I'm concerned, progress peaked with frozen pizza. Like, yeah, dude.
I love like, how he's like, oh, man. The 90s, everything's so crazy. I can't figure out this newfangled machine, this fax machine. The world is so crazy and innovative. And I'm like, oh man, that part of the movie has not aged well.
Hey, can I get your help with this fax machine while we have really huge sexual chemistry? Like, ridiculous amount with that fax machine woman. And he's just like, no, I swear, I'm married. And it's like, I don't know. That's not what I'm feeling.
Right, she's in the plane for most of this movie. One thing, too, that I think this movie does really well is, like, the escalating stakes. Like, the way it's like, okay, she's on the plane, they're circling and stuff, and then you've got that moment where he runs on the runway, and you think, oh, is he gonna, like, save these people? Like, that's Trek. He's another that guy.
He was a that guy for me, because I was like, who is that? I know that face. Colm Meaney,
thank you. Yeah, he's always kind of showing up and stuff. This is like, okay, there's him, and then it's like right before there's like grandmas and like little kids on the plane, so it's like, okay, you're showing me the little kids so John McClane can save the little kids, and they just die in the most horrific fireball. It lands, just... like, oh, for a second, like, they're gonna be okay, and they're like, boom,
oh man, it's ridiculous.
And like... then like firefighters show up, and just to drive the point home, they're like, there's no survivors! And I'm just like, here's a doll from this child, and you're like, fuck! Okay.
We were watching it in the fire engines, and like, ambulances came, we're like, the ambulances can go home. Like, there's no use. Oh, man.
There's nothing you guys are gonna be able to do here.
And like, it's such a fun setup for it, because they're like, you know, they're like, oh, this is what all the bad hackers are doing. They said there's gonna be punishments. I don't know how bad it could be, and it's like, what are they doing? Oh, they're changing the computer to make the floor level minus 200 feet. And like, when they said that, I was like, that sounds bad. How bad can it get? And like, as it kept ramping up, I'm like, holy shit, they're gonna crash a plane. Like, they're gonna make this thing fucking nosedive just into the pavement. And it didn't get to that, but it... And it's... What's crazy about it is you can't even call that the craziest plane explosion in this film.
Yeah. I remember when I... Because I didn't see Die Hard until, like, a little bit later in my life, until I was probably, like, my 20s. And I always thought that the part where he blows up and he's, like, strapped and he's like, ah! And he's like, you see the explosion behind him and he's in the chair. That's such an iconic scene that's, like, in so... Like, you see clip shows of, like, action movies and stuff, like, before the movies start, like, you know, right. Go to theaters before the... And I was always... I was like, oh, this is Die Hard. I just assumed it was from Die Hard 1 because that's, you know, quote-unquote, the good one. And no, it's like, that's an iconic shot. That's from this movie. That's, like, a thing people remember about the Die Hard franchise that is just from here that is really just big and almost as big as anything from Die Hard 1.
Yeah, and also just hilarious.
Yeah, I think this movie gets a bad rap because the first one is so good, but it does do a lot of stuff right.
That's it's one of those things with like the late 80s early 90s franchises, like in that realm where it's like, yeah, they made a bunch of them, so people hate anything that's not the first one. Like people are similar with the Rocky movies.
Well, yeah, I think about like this, the difference between Rocky 1 and Rocky 2, and then the difference between Die Hard 1 and Die Hard 2. Like, it's a lot closer in Die Hard. They got a lot closer to something somebody would actually want to watch.
Yeah,
yeah, it's very much Jaws 2, like that same camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, it's fun, and you can, it feels like they're having fun. It feels like they wanted to make a sequel. And it wasn't just like, come on, you have to. Like, people love the first one, you need to. It's like, can we do this? Yeah, let's do it.
And I like that this is also the only one that kind of, I think, because I haven't seen 3 or 4, but I think it's the only one that is like, okay, this is a Christmas franchise.
Yeah, because Live Free or Die Hard is 4th of July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very, very, very loudly 4th of July. With a vengeance, I'm not sure.
No, I think it's just like a day, because all the kids are in school. That's part of it.
Oh, that sucks. Why would you just do a day? Like, that's
because Hans Gruber's brother is around. He's trying to blow up some schools.
But like, it would be a fun twist to be like, okay, the thing about the Die Hard franchise is each different movie is going to be set on a new holiday,
right? That's they kind of did, Tim Burton's Batman movies kind of did that, which was something like you never really think about, but it's like, oh yeah, like the first one I think is like it's just like Gotham anniversary, so it's nothing really. But then the second one is Christmas, the third one is Halloween, and I can't remember what the fourth one is, but
April Fool's Day, April Fool's, we're going wacky.
Yeah, but the original, like, or not original, but like the Burton's Schumacher Batman movies do that, and I always thought that was a really cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like it would be fun. I don't know. Also, Bruce Willis, he has the reputation nowadays of like not giving a shit, but he's trying in this one.
It's always nice when you see Bruce Willis like giving a real performance and not just kind of like getting a paycheck.
Yeah, the first, you know, 10 minutes, I had to adjust to him having hair.
Yeah, that widow's peak.
Because that. Yeah, that always throws me off. I'm like, something's a little too tall about you, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think he's 3 for 5 on hair, is I believe how this franchise goes.
Because I remember the poster with him and Sam. He's got hair next to Sam Jackson. I know that.
Yeah.
It's less.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he definitely was losing it, even though he didn't want people to think that.
Yeah, well, nobody does.
I mean, I can relate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, I guess Live Free was his first bald one.
Because yeah, there was yeah, a big that's gap only between so three much four.
Time had passed. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, it was 12. Because the gap between 1 and 2 is 2 years. Mm. It's 2 years between 1 and 2, 5 years between 2 and 3, 12 between 3 and 4, and then 6 between 4 and 5.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because this one's clearly like, okay, we have a huge hit on our hands. We need to, like, as quickly as we can, make as competently as we can, a sequel that appropriately escalates the stakes, and I feel like you mm-hmm. can run into trouble a lot with that. Like, I think that while it's not a horrible movie, for example, The Mummy Returns does that, because I think that comes out, like, a year later.
Yeah, Mummy Returns was a quick turnaround, and it was just messy.
It's just, like, the same movie again, but, like, worse with a bigger scale and, like, bad CG. Whereas this, it's like, okay, like, this is the best case scenario for turning around. Well, maybe not the best case, but like a pretty good case scenario for turning around a sequel this quickly to such an iconic film.
Right. It's almost like the gap between Scary Movie and Scary Movie 2. Because I think that's less than a year.
Yeah, that makes
Which
sense.
Which one's the original? What happens in that one?
Scary Movie?
Yeah.
That's one with like Sergeant Doofy. Like... That's the one that's Scream. The was that? One. That one's fun. Two is the Haunted House one.
Yeah, two I know.
Two is Take My Strong hand, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was... Yeah, with the Scary Movies, like, I jumped in around, like, 3 was when I was old enough to be like, these are funny. Like, they say they're scary movies, but they're not, and that's a joke. But yeah, this Scary Movie 2 came out in 2001. Scary Movie came out in 2000. Oh, wow. All of production came, like, writing, producing, and post-production was less than 9 months.
Hmm. Well, another movie that I think does that really well, I think it was the next year, I want to say, was, you know, kind of related to Scary Movie, Scream 2 came out very quickly on the heels of Scream.
Yeah.
And I actually really like Scream 2. I think a part of why that worked is because they already had a script written for Scream 2 before Scream had come out, which is, you know, unusual. Like, usually you gotta write the script, start production, start pre-production, all that, and, like, get it out, get it filmed, and, you know, do post-production, and then release it all within, you know, 6 months or, like, you know, to a year, whatever it is, if you have that quick a turnaround. But luckily, they were a little bit ahead of the eight ball with Scream 2. Where they had, you know, at least a script and stuff in place. So they had, like, a lot of the pre-production done.
Yeah.
And I really like Scream 2, like, probably even more than the first Scream. I love Scream 2. I know that's a controversial statement, but I love Scream 2.
See, I've only seen the first.
That's a franchise I have to get into probably before January.
Oh, yeah. See, that's another one, though, too. It's like, how does the same thing happen to the same... people over and over again, because unlike a lot of other slasher franchises, which focus on the killers, the Scream franchise focuses on Sidney Prescott and her friends. So it's like, how does all these different killers wearing the same mask keep coming after her? You know,
yeah. Why are these assholes like, oh, I know what I want to do today. Yeah. This total stranger, I'm gonna torture her a little bit. I'm trying to think of what else to talk about with this first half. They go into the, there's the little shootout and fight with some of the Army Fatigues guys in the little luggage compartment room, which was disappointing, because it was a fine fight. It was, you know, it was whatever. But Toy Story 2 told me that I was going to be a roller coaster ride in there, and that looked pretty boring. It was, not the only time I thought about Toy Story 2 while watching this movie.
Right.
he's laying on the runway. I'm like, I remember when Woody does this, but he can throw his little pull string. Man, that's a good movie.
God, I love Toy Story 2.
Yeah, it's great.
I was wondering how he knew that his badge was going to Cleveland.
That was a joke.
I know, it was a joke.
Yeah, and he's saying stuff like, how can the same shit happen to the same guy twice? Right. There's the quick runner of the newswoman being like, can I have a word? And people are like, yeah, two. Fuck you. Fuck off. And I'm like, that's a good runner, but I'm sad we didn't get a third. Sad it resolved itself with him being like, I need to talk to you. Get me in a helicopter, please. They have that, the new antenna, NX Sky, whatever it was called. It was, like, some big complicated name to, like, try to get their system back up. And there was the trap with the shootout. There's at one point where John McClane uses the moving walkway to get his gun to his hand.
Oh, yeah.
Laughed real hard at that. Like, I think the fun part about Die Hard is, like, it's always sold as this, like, serious action movie. Hmm. But it's there to have fun.
Yeah,
and no. It does.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because of the tone that McTiernan establishes in the first one, because, you know, this is a guy who, he made Predator, and he knows exactly, like, the conventions of action movies and how to just kind of, like, deconstruct them. And so I think he really did a good job with that again in Die Hard. And, you know, even though he only directed the first one, I think a lot of, at least probably the first three, from what I know about them, followed suit with that tone. I know that 4 and 5 go off the rails a little bit and become whole other things, but...
Right.
Yeah. 3 is still at least on the same vein. It's like a bigger scope. I think probably it got worse because of the scope of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like you guys were saying,
we start
the building, and then we go to the airport, and then it gets to a city, and now it's a whole city. Like, you run the risk of it being not good when it gets bigger.
How do we escalate? Like, and this is always the Fast and Furious joke, which they did, but, like, after Russia, like, fighting Russia to protect the U.S. or whatever, I guess the next step would be space, but, like, that would probably suck.
Well, that's interesting. Like, circling back to Predator again, one of the rumors of how Predator got started was in every Rocky movie, he had to fight somebody bigger and stronger and better.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this running joke in Hollywood, like, oh, by the time Rocky 5 comes out, he's going to have to fight an alien. And apparently, like, Shane Black or somebody heard that, not Shane Black, because he was just an actor in that movie, but somebody heard that and was like, oh, let's make that into a movie. And it became Predator.
That rules.
Oh, wow.
I remember a Mad Magazine thing was, like, pitching all of the Rocky sequels, and they were all crossovers. It was, like, him fighting the Wicked Witch of the West, him trying to fight C-3PO, but, like, the metal was too hard. This one is called Summary 2, Summary Harder. No one wants poor John McClane's help with the terrorists, especially not Bad Mustache Cop. So Harry Bruce Willis takes matters into his own hands. He finds a silly janitor and looks at blueprints. Time passes, gas dwindles, things are tense. John finds the landing plane with the Latin American dictator in it. The naked stretcher and his friends blow the plane up, but you can't kill Johnny Boy in Parachute Town. What? I understand what it's referencing, but it's quite a phrase. Some commandos show up who are definitely good guys, I promise. One traffic control guy goes rogue and helps McClane find the terrorist hideout. It seems like they're cornered, the commandos are helping. But oh wait, they're firing blanks, because they too are bad guys? Don't worry though, planes are full of gas and that explodes once you corner all the terrorists in an explosive location. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, the day is saved. With that final plane thing, we were watching it with a friend, and he and I, like, neither of us had seen it, so we were looking at each other the whole time, and we were like, is he, like, he starts letting the fuel out, and he's like, is he just gonna, like, let the fuel run out, and then the plane crashes? I'm like, I think he's about to smoke a cigarette and just blow that shit up. And I was like, I don't know if that's true, but wouldn't it be so cool if that happened? And he pulled out the lighter, and we started screaming.
That was fucking great.
Oh, that's so cool.
See, that's, like, the part that I remember from this movie every time is that, and...
I like, too, how I liked how I was like, oh, this thing that like has no relevance to my life now, but I was kind of banter that I had with this other fake terrorist 2 years ago. I'm just going to say that right now. It doesn't make any sense. There's no one here to hear it, but it's badass. And I was like, yeah, good. Yes, say the thing, because I don't know why you're saying it. There was a brief reference to you being kind of like John Wayne earlier, but yeah, like, go for it, man.
Yeah, it's, I think, honestly, John McClane's just, like, thinking of himself as an action star. Like, he's just, like, he's doing this for himself. He's like, man, it would be so cool if this was a movie if I said this. You don't hear him say it, like, in normal life. You don't see him, like, I don't know, throw something out from a great distance and be like, hey, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
Yeah.
Too bad, honestly.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I think this movie does really well that the sequels lose sight of is just, you know, and this is not a new take, but, like, making him just, like, keeping him in that everyman that he is, you know, like, keeping him, he's just, like, an average cop who gets stuck in this thing. It's still pretty self-contained. It is still, like, the scale does expand, which, like we said before, kind of becomes problems later on in the franchise, but it's still, okay, it's in an airport, he is going from a couple different locations, but they're all in this kind of one area. So I think that works really well, and why I think this movie is so revolutionary, and the series is so revolutionary, is because, like, in the 80s, you got, like, the action stars were, like, Arnold and Stallone and Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like, these guys were, like, not human beings. These guys were just, like, he had muscles on top of muscles and just, like, could, like punch a snake and just, like, do all these insane things, whereas McClane is, like, basically the progenitor of the action stars that we see today, whereas, like, you know, other than maybe Indiana Jones, not a lot of people had that kind of style of action hero in the 80s, and then over the course of the 90s, you know, this is right at the beginning of the 90s, and then it, like, eventually goes to, you know, the Matrix, and that's why now instead of seeing, like, action stars, you're seeing actors be action stars, you know, you're seeing, like, people who are good actors in these action movies. You're seeing, like, Paul Rudd getting buff, you know, like, to be an action star, whereas you would never see, you know, a comedian from the 80s just, like, working out 8 hours a day to be in a superhero movie that's also a comedy, you know? And I think,
you know, an absolutely ripped Rodney Dangerfield playing the Hulk.
Hey, what, I tell you what, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry, I get no respect.
Yeah, I'm gonna smash. Nobody lets me smash.
I would love that.
I would actually watch the shit out of it now that I think about it more.
Yeah.
Yeah, this does kind of keep him as the, as a normal everyman. Like, you see him getting hurt, you see him having some issues, but towards the end, he just turns into a psychopath.
He really, like, does.
He bites the one guy's pinky off, just with no remorse. He's blowing up that plane and laughing about it.
Like, what else do you do, though, you know? After this series of events, you're laying on the ground, it's, like, snowing on your bare chest.
I get it's a cathartic release.
A plane.
But, like, damn, man.
See, one thing that I don't know how I felt about in this movie is that he's a lot more proactive in this. Like, he's a lot more reactionary in Die Hard 1, because he's, like, in this building, and there's terrorists trying to get him, and they're looking for him and stuff. And he's kind of put into that situation. Where in this movie, like, people are, like, telling him, John, back the fuck up. Like, you need to chill, dude, like, a lot of the time. And he's right in doing, like, you know, like, because the army guys are evil and, you know, the cops are incompetent or whatever. But he is, like, putting himself, like, he's like, no. And he's kind of, like, pushing himself into that action hero role instead of just being caught up in it. And, you know, because he's, like, trying to save his wife and stuff. But he's, like, taking actions in this movie that further the plot along. And I don't really know how I feel about that, because it does change that dynamic a little bit. But it makes him more of an active protagonist that maybe makes him a little bit. But at the same time, you're like, are you going to go to jail after this? Because you're, like, murdering a bunch of people. Like, they're bad guys, but still, like, you're just blowing up planes and doing all this stuff, you know? Like, it's not like you can claim self-defense or, like, you know, because you put yourself in these situations.
There's yeah. no real gray area there. He yeah. just blew up a plane with 20 people on it.
Right.
Yeah, at the end, the cop rips up his parking ticket. He's like, oh, man, it's Christmas. Who cares? And I'm like, yeah, but there's a lot more he's going to have to answer for. You do realize that.
Well, it's like there's this line in Rocky V that me and a buddy of mine always used to laugh at. Because at the end of that movie, it's a terrible movie, Rocky gets into the street fight. And there's this, like, fight promoter who had been, like, an antagonist throughout the movie. And after Rocky wins the fight against this guy, he walks up to this fight promoter who's standing in front of a car. And the fight promoter throws his hands up. He's got a big fur coat. And he's like, touch me and I'll sue. And Rocky goes, sue me for what? And then he punches him in the gut into a car. And we always used to be like, I don't know, Rock.
Assault. Yeah.
I've never seen that movie. Yeah, it's so hilarious.
It's a little ridiculous, but that's part of the fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's your extension of disbelief.
Yeah, you realize, like, oh, shit, like, I don't know, man. But then you're like, he blew up a plane with a cigarette lighter.
Yeah.
Like, cool. you saw fire take off from the snow.
That was so badass. The little just, because you're like, oh, it's taking off. They're getting away. It's not going to, oh, no, here we go.
Oh my God. And then they all use it as a landing strip.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a heartwarming ending. It's like, the fire, it can be a landing strip. It's like, and the charred bodies. And it's like, and the fire.
It's a What's Christmas a big pile mirror? At the end of the landing strip.
One thing don't worry about that. Like a little nitpicky for me in that scene. I was just like, before they were like, we've got to get to this terminal. And he's over here. And he's over here. And I'm just like, so wait, his wife's plane that was landing just happened to be at that exact right terminal with the other one that was taken off. Like, I get, or they were close enough to see it, even though it was, all right, whatever, I'll let it. Like, it was just kind of one of those things. It's like, okay, this is a little nitpicky for me.
it's a Christmas miracle.
Unless you're the guys on the plane.
Well, yeah.
It's not as much of a miracle for them.
It's a terrible smelling Christmas miracle. There's an infamous thing of on TV stations like TBS, whenever they run this, Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker has to be censored. Mm-hmm. I think the most infamous one might be in 3, and it's Yippee-ki-yay, melon farmer. But in this one, it was Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
See, that's my favorite one. I love that because it's utter nonsense, but it sounds cool, but stupid.
It sounds cool, but stupid. This IMDb thing says the code name for Esperanza was Falcon, so, like, I guess that's what he's referencing.
Okay.
Like, there's no Mr. Falcon in the film.
But did he hear that ever? I don't think he heard that. Yeah,
he might have heard that on Marvin Martin. What was the janitor's name? I say this like I didn't
watch.
I think it was Marvin.
I say this as if I didn't watch it like an hour ago. But yeah, I think it was Marvin. But like on Marvin's little radio that he just had.
Okay. Huh.
Marvin was a fun little guy.
Yeah, he was.
Yes. Well, speaking of Marvin, I like how another way they escalate this one is like he had one sidekick who was helping him out in the first movie. This one, he'll have, like, 3 or 4. Like, and he just kind of just bounces back between them. Like, he's got Marvin. And then, you know, he's got this cop. And then he's got this army guy. And this sidekick was a bad sidekick. And this sidekick you thought was a bad guy at the beginning who didn't like him, he actually comes around and he rips up his park. And it's just like, whoa, okay. Like, I liked when he had just, like, one dude that he trusted. And he was like, but it's like, we have to give him a sidekick for each situation. You have to give him an army sidekick and a cop sidekick. And a janitor's sidekick, like just, I felt like you really needed to streamline that a little bit, but it was another, like, product of this movie just kind of, like, escalating a little bit instead of being just confined to that one Nakatomi Plaza being, you know, over the whole airport, and now if we're going to these different spots, you need to have a different sidekick for each situation.
Right. And, like, they don't meet up and help each other out. There's never, like, Team McClane.
Yeah.
They all just have their specific functions.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, it's trial and error. They have one sidekick, and then they're like, what if we had a bunch of them? And they're like, that didn't really work. What if we pare that down to one Sam Jackson? Or one Justin Long.
Yeah, and then they go one Justin Long, and it's like, ooh, we should have stuck with Sam Jackson.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they were like, what about Jai Courtney? And we all know what happened there.
And America goes, who? Because, Luke, do you know Jai Courtney at all?
He's John McClane's son in that movie, I imagine.
Is he in Avatar, or is that the other guy? Because they're the same person to me.
That's Sam Worthington. Yeah. Jai Courtney was Captain Boomerang.
Oh, okay. That's the only movie I've liked Jai Courtney in. I thought he was... I've never liked Jai Courtney, and then I watched The Suicide Squad, or the first Suicide Squad, and I was like, wow, this is not a good movie, but Jai Courtney's good in it? Okay.
Yeah, I remember really liking Captain Boomerang in the first Suicide Squad. I'm like, bad movie, but like, more of that guy, please. And James Gunn was like, we'll grant your wish a little bit.
I remember having no strong feelings about him in that movie.
Like, I wasn't, like, raving about him leaving, but I was like, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I was really sad at the beginning of the second one, you know? Like, that got me.
There's a goof, apparently. There are a lot, according to IMDb, but the biggest one, the entire premise of the movie is apparently bullshit.
Okay.
Shutting down communications of an airport will leave the overhead aircraft helpless and uninformed. Any flight service station transmitter, airport, aircraft radio shop, or aircraft itself within 50 miles could have alerted those pilots of the situations. Literally, there would be hundreds of radios in the area that could be used to end the terrorist plot.
I don't know. It was the 90s.
It was the 90s. You had to wake up and smell them. It was snowing real hard.
People don't know how to... People, well, I think it's interesting. Like, you know, the 90s... People, John McClane doesn't know how to use fax machines. We also don't know how to use fax machines in 2021 here. But either way, so like it's like, you know, we're like, it's weird that we've like come back to that. Like it's like, oh, fax machines were so ahead of the time that people didn't know how to use them, and now they're so behind the time that people don't know how to use them.
It's just like it's kind of a phone.
Just all the great, just like, wow, look at all this crazy new 90s technology that they had in this movie. Just kind of made me laugh a little bit.
Oh my god, plain phone in the bathroom?
No fooling.
Old woman tasers that kill the reporter guy?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't die. We see him at the end, but like, he does not move and does not blink.
He has the same heart attack a pet hamster does. And he is just there stunned.
I guess that felt like they, I don't know, that plot line felt like they adapted the book and were like, well, the book's called 58 Minutes. We have 58 minutes of movie here. We need something else. Like, that felt a little stapled on for me.
Yeah, they like, okay, we gotta kind of cut to the wife in the air to, like, you know, and we gotta have, you know, Peck back because he was in the first one, and we've got to kind of find
fan favorite character, reporter Dick Asshole, or whatever his name was. It's Dick, but I forget what his last name actually is.
Who, he's one of the great 80s just like assholes. Like, he's also in Ghostbusters. They cast him in Lost as like a horrible evil principal because the producers of Lost were such a big fan of just him being like such a dick in the 80s. They were like, we need a character to just be a huge dick that is worse than Ben Linus. So how about, like, gave him a call and he was like, yeah, I'll be down.
Oh my God, that is him.
Yeah.
William Atherton.
The season 6 principal.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and he's mostly a dick. Richard Thornburg is the name. Richard Thornburg. Yeah, he's a dick in Biodome.
Oh my god, I haven't thought about that movie in like 18 years.
Oh wow, he really fell off a cliff after the 90s. At least with things that I know.
Yeah.
Like, the last thing he was in that I'm aware of the title and like was a studio thing was The Last Samurai.
Oh my god. The Last Samurai. It was like, he was in that. Wait, what was he in The Last Samurai?
Winchester Rep.
Okay. Oh, he was the guy who was like, oh, yes, miss, come sell our guns here, Tom Cruise. Mm. Okay. Okay, I vaguely remember that.
I have not heard about in years.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it a lot when it came out, but, like, because I was in third grade, I didn't understand what was weird about Tom Cruise is the Last Samurai.
But didn't people love it when it came out? Like, wasn't it hugely popular?
I think that's why I heard about it so much. I was just like, yeah, man, that's a thing that people, like, it was nominated for 4 Oscars.
Right.
It was well received. Its box office total was $456 million.
Well, the thing I've heard is that, and, like, I don't know, like, this is just what I've heard, so I'm not trying to, like, defend the movie or anything, but that it's The Last Samurai doesn't refer to Tom Cruise, it refers to Ken Watanabe, like, the plural of samurai is samurai, and it refers to Ken Watanabe and the whole group.
Oh, okay.
So, that's what I've heard, and so I think they probably could have used a better title so that people weren't like, oh, this white dude is The Last Samurai.
Yeah,
because, you know, it is kind of like that same, like, Dances with Wolves, like, you know, Natty Bumpo, just kind of like white savior type complex that gets thrown in a little bit. I think it's a solid
Avatar
film.
In a way.
Yeah, but yeah,
Dances with Wolves. I love Dances with Wolves though.
Yeah, no, like it's still a solid. Like, I like Dances with Wolves. I like Last Samurai. It's a pretty solid movie. I like Ed Zwick is a really good director. But
mm-hmm.
The Hans Zimmer score too in that movie. Whew, God, it's good.
He's a hardworking man.
For a reason.
Do we have anything else specific we want to bring up about Die Hard 2 before moving on to the criteria?
I think I hit everything, yeah, that I was thinking of. I talked about the sidekicks. I talked about sequel escalation, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, then I think it's time to move on to the thing we do every week. We weigh this movie against the pacifier using our list of criteria, which has been described as crack fire. First up, we have, how was the soundtrack?
And it wasn't that noticeable. It was just like, it was an action movie soundtrack, so, like, not bad.
Yeah,
I would agree.
When I saw, I was like looking over, you know, all your guys' topics today, and I was like, saw that, I was like, oh yeah, the soundtrack in this movie, like, that was the thing. And I was like, okay, the only, I think, notable thing about it is that it is a Christmas soundtrack, very clearly. It is, like, does have a lot of Christmas music playing. Although, you know, I guess, like, so the thing is, I will preface by saying that I did not watch The Pacifier. You guys kind of told me I don't have to, and I was like, it'd be kind of funny if I didn't, I think. I think let's keep it like that. So
that's not a problem.
But I do think that the soundtrack in Die Hard 1, which kind of has some more, like, updated modern Christmas music, this one doesn't really have that. It doesn't have, like, I think it was Run DMC did the Christmas song at the beginning of Die Hard 1, which is really cool. There's nothing really like that in this one. It's just kind of, you know, your classic, you know.
Yeah, Carol of the Bells, Let It Snow.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for me personally, that can't beat the nostalgia of Smash Mouth and Good Charlotte.
No, I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's like, I put it in a separate category, because this is like, it's not really good or bad, it just, like,
it exists.
It serves the movie fine.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be like, this is my favorite thing to listen to.
It might be for some people. Yeah. You never know.
That's fair. And speaking of some people, where does the main actor land on the Dieselometer, which is a ranking and rating of all Vin Diesel performances, both on screen and off, ranking charm, likability, Vin Dieseliness, what have you? What'd you guys say?
See, I want to say, like, a really early one, like the, what's the lawyer one again?
Find Me Guilty,
mostly because it's just like, famous bald guy has hair. But I think in reality, it's like an earlier Fast and Furious, maybe, like, I guess, 4, like, 1 or 4, because it's like the character is being taken seriously while it's still having fun, and he's not a ridiculous superhero yet.
See, mostly.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, okay, so I'm also not, like, this is the thing, I'm not, like, very familiar at all with Vin Diesel's filmography, other than, like, probably Guardians, Saving Private Ryan, and The Iron Giant. So I actually have never seen any of the Fast and Furious movies. That's kind of like...
Neither had I before this year.
But if
they're fun to plow through.
From what I've heard about them, it sounds like this is probably on par with, like, a Fast Five, which is kind of the one that I know reinvigorated the franchise and kind of, like, it had that fun to it. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, like, these guys are just kind of, like, out here. And it's, like, kind of still knows it's ridiculous, but it's still a Fast and Furious movie. And I think, you know, I don't think any of the Fast and Furious movies are going to hit a Die Hard 1. But I think maybe the best one, which is what I hear, 5, might hit a Die Hard 2.
Okay.
All right. I would say, yeah, a Fast and Furious would fit this for me as well. I think much the same as what you said, Connor. I think maybe 1 or like the very beginning of 4, because by the end they're like flipping over the prison transport bus to Vin Diesel, you know.
Yeah,
that's like
that's the
start of where it goes nuts.
But like at the end of this, he blows up a plane with a cigarette lighter and bites a guy's pinky off. So like,
that's true. And in the middle, he is exploded out of that plane.
Yeah, it pushes the suspension of disbelief. It's like, I don't think this could happen, but maybe. Like, and I feel like, you know, that is probably in line with, like, you know, some of the earlier Fast and Furious was like, this is not real life, but it still feels like at least reality that I'm familiar with, and not like they're like, you know, like jump, like taking a car and like swinging it off a bridge and shooting the thing and then shooting the car into space, like where it just goes totally off the rails, which also the Die Hard movies do, like where John McClane jumps through a building and falls 15 feet and just like goes through glass and he's totally fine. Like, it still feels in that same kind of like heightened reality that it exists in, but still based on some reality.
Live Free or Die Hard, he launches a car into a helicopter.
Yeah. And then by 5, he is driving a semi-truck that's attached to a helicopter with a metal chain.
This franchise loves helicopters.
Yeah. It does seem to. And speaking of helicopters, did you like this movie as a kid? Or would you have liked this movie as a kid?
I would have. I think I just would have had fun with it, like with all the action, with all the exploding.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I never saw it as a kid, but I think I really would have enjoyed it. You know, like you said, with the action, the exploding, I think that some of the machinations with the plot of like, because there's a lot of moving pieces in this. Like, there's a lot of like, oh, well, if we do this, this will happen. If we go, we have to go over to this place. And now if we go to this place, this plane can land. Well, but this, the guys did this. And, oh, actually, this guy was working for this guy the whole time. There's a lot of that, like, surprisingly, like, a lot of moving pieces in this movie. And I think that would have gone over my head as a kid. Like, if I was, like, watching this movie when I was, like, 7 or something, I'd be like, oh, this guy we thought was a good guy, and this guy we thought was a bad guy. And McClane needs to get his wife on the ground. Like, I would have gotten the basics, and I would have just enjoyed it. I think a lot of the, like, how anything's working would have gone totally over my head, but I would have just been like, plane, bad guy, plane, explode, cool.
Although, I do think if I watched this at an age before I was like 8 or 10, it would have made me scared of airplanes.
Because you never know when you're going to be on a plane somewhere.
You never know.
It's going to blow it up.
Yeah. You never know. So many planes were just chilling there, like, threatening to fall into the sea. But it's okay. They appeased them by turning on an early season Simpsons.
And I would have also been like, Washington, D.C. is a terrible place. I never want to go there.
Yeah. I mean, with all those congressmen, it's pretty much a terrible place. I never want to go now.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
What did the director go on to do, Connor?
So this was directed by Rennie Harlan. After this, he right before this, he did Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, which I think is one people like. I think, like, that's part of the plot line. People are like, these are fun before it starts getting really stupid. But after this, a couple things I'd never heard of. The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, Angel City. He did Cliffhanger.
Oh. Mr. Stallone collection.
Yeah. He did a TV series called Gladiatorit. Spelled Gladiatorit. But after that was one of the most notorious bombs in cinema history, Cutthroat Island.
Oh, man.
The Long Kiss Goodnight, Deep Blue Sea, Driven, Mindhunters, Exorcist the Beginning, The Covenant, Cleaner. That's not like The Cleaner, is it? No, it's not. Okay.
Cutthroat Island is the one that ruined it for Gina Davis,
yeah,
isn't it?
And yeah, and pirate movies until 2003.
Until Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
12 Rounds, 5 Days of War, a couple episodes of Burn Notice, White Collar, Covert Affairs, Devil's Pass, Graceland, The Legend of Hercules. I thought that was a Brett Ratner movie.
No, wait, that was the other Hercules movie that came out that year.
Oh, that's the not Dwayne Johnson movie. That's Kellan Lutz, a person we all know and remember. Skip Trace, Bodies at Rest. He's in production on The Refuge and Inspector Palmu. So, like, Rennie Harlan's still working.
Mm-hmm. He's a bad guy of directors, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's the most successful Finnish film director in the history of Hollywood.
Okay.
Good for him.
Yeah.
That's kind of like this question that I wanted to ask. Who was your Brad Garrett / Carol Kane of this movie?
The memorably
wacky, memorable side character.
There's a few options, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd give it to Marvin the Janitor, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
He came out. Yeah. He had stuff. He was stealing coats. He was screaming about Iwo Jima. Silly little man.
And he kept right doing it.
He never stopped.
Yeah, I think that's like probably the right option. But I think that William Atherton, like as Dick, like he's just so just like over the top. Like, you know, he's horrible, and he's like just a character you love to hate. There's a reason they brought him back from the first one. Just, you know, so they can give him some more time. You can get that catharsis of tasing him at the end. Like, he's not a fun, wacky character, but he is a kind of just like, you know, he's a dick, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of wacky dicks, was there anything as memorable as the Peter Panda dance in this movie?
I struggled to think of how that is speaking about wacky dicks, but planes blow up. Two of them do in one movie.
Yeah, I would say the second plane explosion.
Yeah.
You'd be Kaya, motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely memorable. But unlike we were saying before, you know, like, there's, if you see a clip show before a movie, they're not putting in the Peter Panda dance, but they are putting in the exploding, flying upwards from the plane. You know, John McClane shouting.
Yeah. And maybe those two clips should go right back to back. In modern versions.
Well, now they got Nicole Kidman. She just comes and tells you, "Welcome to the back to the theater. We've missed you. COVID is bad."
It's Nicole Kidman just watching the Peter Panda dance to be like, "Come back to an AMC. Sadness feels good here." And Vin Diesel's just doing a little dance.
No, it's like when she like looks at the screen, and just for a second, you see like going to like, you know, a couple like going to dress. She's go somewhere you've never been before, and it's just the Peter Panda dance.
I am seeing if I can download that to try and edit that together.
Oh my God,
that thing is so dumb because it's like advertising. Come see a movie at AMC theaters, and it's like, where am I right now? Then
I'm already in.
You
here.
Got me. You didn't need to pay her $50 million.
You got my money. You especially have my A-list money, so like, you don't need to advertise to me at all.
Exactly.
And last but not least, is there anything as batshit insane in this movie as the Sound of Music subplot in The Pacifier, which, in case you don't remember, is a short subplot that comes in about halfway through the movie, where one of the young boys that Vin Diesel is watching, Seth, is skipping wrestling practice, and he's got his hair bleached blonde, and when the school tosses his locker, they find a Nazi armband, and they pull him into the office, and they're like, hey, kid, you're doing some kind of Nazi stuff here, and he doesn't say, no, I'm not. He books it out of there, and Vin Diesel chases him on a little girl's bike to what appears to be a child Nazi meetup, but instead, it is a community theater production of The Sound of Music. Vin Diesel later goes on to direct that production and cast Brad Garrett. Is there anything in this movie that's as batshit insane as that?
The fact that it's happening to John McClane again?
I'll raise you one. And this is something that we didn't talk about up to this point. The villain of this movie, the guy who is running the whole plot, when we're introduced to him,
Nikki,
he's full Ocean 12 naked stretching.
Yeah, he's doing naked jujitsu.
Yeah.
Why?
Because
sometimes you do naked jujitsu.
That's how you got to introduce these crazy guys. Like, they got to be naked doing stretches to show you they're intense.
He doesn't even really fight guys that much.
One thing that it's not as insane as any of that, but like the fact that they call in his army buddy, like the guy played by John Amos, they're like, yeah, we've got this guy and his whole team that were together with him. I'm like, that's maybe a conflict of, like, why are you calling these guys? And it's like, there was nobody else. And it's like, yeah, clearly they're the bad guys. And then that scene where, like, there's the one kid who's like, yeah, I wish I was with you guys. I can't remember what they say. It was a very 90s, like, conflict. And he's like, yeah, that's so I didn't have to. And he just fucking slits his throat. Like, I was like, oh, yeah. Shit. Like, damn. They're just, like, full on, just, like, we are, like, we're bad and we're very, very evil and just, like, alright, just how everyone is out to get John McClane in this movie, I thought was pretty wild.
They don't catch any blood on those suits, either.
Nope. Those pristine white.
Yeah. You guys have a final ranking rating for the movie?
I think you forgot a little something that we do now.
It's Crackle time.
So there's a website called Crackle. It used to be owned by Sony. Now it's owned for Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. And in lieu of a plot synopsis, if a movie's available on their site, they have a little sentence of flavor text that's called Why It Crackles.
Okay.
For example, a Vin Diesel movie. The Last Witch Hunter is now available on Crackle. And instead of the plot's description, it just says, Vin Diesel's got 99 problems, and a witch is all of them. So if Die Hard 2 were available on Crackle, why would it crackle? What would be its little flavor text?
John McClane has 99 problems, and at least two of them are terrorists.
I would say people and plain fireballs do crackle.
I'd say this wasn't what John McClane was hoping for when he wished he would have a nice, plain Christmas.
Ah, all right.
See what you did there? And now, does anyone have any final rankings, ratings for the movie?
I'd give it 6.5 bitten off pinkies out of 8. It's a lot of fun. Like, maybe I had low expectations because people were like, it's a sequel, it sucks. And after watching Live Free or Die Hard, which was okay, I was like, yeah, I don't know, maybe it does suck. But, like, it's a good time, man. Two big plane explosions.
Yeah. I think I'd give it a pile of stolen coats. It's a lot of fun, you know? I do think it's a little better than The Pacifier.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say a little better than The Pacifier.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen The Pacifier, as I said, but I'm going to say that it's better than The Pacifier. I would say that this movie is 4/5 of Bruce Willis's hairline left. So So, you know, it's receding a little bit, but he's still got that widow's peak pretty prominently. As the movies go on and he loses more hair, the movies also lose quality, I think.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And that's Die Hard 2. Next up, our guest has picked our next movie that we're going to watch. And he's going to give us some hints, make us guess. It's time for the coming attractions game.
More holiday snow highway option.
Yeah, yeah.
We also introduced normally this week and forgot the snow part again.
We are in the throes of Christmas.
Yeah. So in keeping with what you guys are doing, Die Hard 2, you know, Christmas movie, although people don't traditionally think of it in the Christmas genre, the one that I'm going to give you guys is another film that I think is definitely a Christmas film, but it doesn't always get placed in that genre, possibly because a lot of scenes don't take place at Christmas, but every time the two main characters talk, it is Christmas or Christmas Eve.
Okay. Do you have like a genre or like a year it came out?
It came out in 2002, and the genre is... crime.
Collateral's 2004, right?
I believe so, yeah. It's not Collateral.
Damn. 2002 crime movie works.
I can give you guys another hint if you'd like.
Yeah, keep rattling them off until we say enough.
Here's another hint. It was the actor, this movie came out on Christmas. The actor who was in it, who is a very big name, also was in another movie that was released right around about a week apart.
December 2002.
And both of these movies were directed by very, very big name directors, two of the kind of new Hollywood class from the 70s. Then I wouldn't say that either of these are their more well-known films, but they are... I'd say both of them are pretty good, maybe underrated films.
Is it a Scorsese?
No, so the Scorsese is the other director. So one was a Scorsese movie. This one is a Spielberg movie.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Yeah. Oh, this is a good one.
You got it?
It became a musical on Broadway around 2011.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of how to help Luke out with this. Neither of the actors' faces are on the poster, it's just arms and legs.
It has, opening credit sequence is kind of an extended, art sequence, that is, I don't know, how would you describe it?
Cool.
Yes, it's very six. It's set. A period piece too. It's set mostly in the 60s, I think, but it spans quite a bit of time.
Not gonna name the two main actors, but this was a prior to fame Amy Adams appearance. Mm-hmm. That when you think about it, you're like, oh shit, Amy Adams was in this, and she had braces. The title
I don't think
is,
I've ever seen Amy Adams with braces.
The title is a taunt. You know, you might say it when you're playing a little game.
It's based on a book by a real person, his autobiography.
Maybe, you know, you're playing tag as a little kid. The one kid's slow, so you tell him, oh, catch me if you can. Right?
Is it catch
yes,
me if you can?
Yes, catch me if you can.
Okay.
That's... When you said the big actor in December 2002, I'm like, okay, it's Leonardo DiCaprio, but what did he do then? But I'm excited. I remember loving Catch Me If You Can when I watched it when I was younger.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
All right, awesome. I'm glad you guys like it.
All right, well, thank you. And thank you for coming on, Derek.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've had a lot of fun talking about this.
Do you have anything you want to plug? Do you want to tell us about Underrated?
Yeah. So, you know, if any listeners out there, you liked hearing anything I've said today, as I kind of mentioned at top, I host another podcast called Underrated, where we talk about movies that are just kind of underrated or under the radar, just kind of passed most people by. You know, this week we're talking about Holiday, which is, you know, a movie that did well financially, but got kind of killed critically. So, you know, but it can be, you know, kind of anything that for whatever reason people just need to see more of. I do that. I write for WatchMojo.com. If you guys are see there any of their top 10 lists, you've probably heard some of my stuff. You can.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Thank you. So, yeah, just however you're listening to this, if you want to just, you know, go ahead and listen to Underrated on the same app. You know, we're all, I'm also on Instagram. It's Derek's Photos. That's Derick's underscore photos. You know, or check me out on Medium, just Derek McDuff. I write some stuff there occasionally. I'm actually thinking about writing something on Catch Me If You Can. So, see if that happens.
Nice.
But yeah, that's pretty much me.
Awesome. And for us, you can, of course, follow us anywhere on your social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, at No Highway Pod. We have our No Highway Option YouTube channel and Twitch that we haven't updated yet in a while, but it exists. And you can send us an email, nohighwaypod@gmail.com, if you want to put something on a random request roulette wheel, or if you want to yell at us about us being wrong about Die Hard 2, whatever you want. Luke, do you have a thing this week?
Yeah, what's your favorite holiday hand soap? I feel like every year there's a couple new ones. Would you call in? Tell us what your favorite one is.
A couple?
Yeah, there's like a lot of new ones every year, I feel.
It's like it's peppermint, sugar cookie, and tree are like the three I can think of. But anyway, you can give us a call or a text on the Highway Patrol tip line. That's 301-941-7493. Tell us your hand soap thing. Tell us your opinions on movies. Leave a random request roulette thing. Or whatever you want. Give us a call, shoot us a text, we'll play it on the show. As mentioned before, Brad, past and future guest, has been sending in his Spider-Man opinions for the Spider-Thon, which is coming up on Christmas Day. That's going to be recording of every Spider-Man movie leading up to the release of No Way Home. But you can tune in next week to hear us talk all about Catch Me If You Can. Oh, we have to do this twice because we forgot last episode. So thank you to Ian C. Weber for composing our theme song. Thank you to Ian C. Weber for composing our theme song. The C this week can stand for, what do you think?
Carcinogenic.
Carcinogenic, sure. That's Ian Carcinogenic Weber, follow the link in our show description to hear all of his cool stuff on his website.
And anybody got anything else?
No, I think that's it.
All right. And for Snow Highway Option, I've been Luke.
And I have been Connor.
And I've been Derek. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yes, thank you so much for coming. Tune in next week for Catch Me If You Can.
And these have been all of our opinions. And if you liked them, great. But if you didn't, that doesn't matter. Because it's our way.
No highway.
No highway option.
I was a little too quick.
We never know the speed to do it. It's part of the joke now.
That was super fun.
The theme music for No Highway Option was created by Ian C. Weber. To hear more of Ian's music and see some of his videos and stuff, follow the new link in our show description. No Highway Option was co-created and co-hosted by Connor J. Burke and Luke Smith, and produced by Connor.